Thank you. Without a waste of time, honorable members, our guests, delegation from the department, Centec, Alta, also signed by Vaseline Center in the course of the program. From South African Zoo joining us from different platforms this morning to follow the proceedings of the committee. Honorable members, as you are aware in terms of the notice convening this meeting, that today would first deal with a presentation from Centec, where they'll brief us on the work they do in relation to transmission and all that, the cost thereof, as well as at least giving us a fair understanding as we continue to engage the SABC matters and concerns with regard to transmission costs and so on. So Centec will do that brief, which will be 15 minutes, and then we engage and we'll allow them to leave, given that they also have senior management strengthening session. We'll then take thereafter Outer, who would have asked to brief the committee on what they would have raised as maladministration and concerns with regard to USASA over a period of time, which the committee would have granted them space to address the committee, and the committee will have an opportunity to clarify itself on any matter that they may not be clear of. Not that it will be a direct response, because in terms of the program of the committee, would have the department and USASA also responded in the next meeting, having heard the presentation, as well as having received the questions that would have been sent to them. Then after the honorable members get to by the Link Center, as we had agreed in the previous meeting, that given the tight schedule of Parliament and party work, we'll probably have to squeeze one of the days for Link Center so in that score. May I ask that you mute if you are not speaking, please? That would help us greatly, because your background noise is interfering with the meeting. Welcome, Honorable Van Damme, if you can also mute your mic for now. So that's where we are. Thanks, Honorable Van Damme. So in that score, honorable members, that's how we are going to proceed with the meeting. The other rules, as you know, would apply, just to remind ourselves, especially those that may be from outside of Parliament, but because we are on a virtual platform and it may be difficult to control other things that would happen on the sides, please make sure that if you are not on the platform, you switch your video and your mic off or mute, whatever call it, so that it doesn't really interfere with the meeting. We speak through the chair of the meeting.
Sorry. Yes. Okay. So
this is what we're trying. said there, the host muted me. So you should mute those that come in and speak without getting platform. So if we do that, I think our meeting will be smooth, like it's always been. But we'll allow members to engage freely on the matters that are before us. Of course, they are respecting the time. So without the waste of time, I will then look at the application for leave of absence. Yes.
Apologies. Okay.
Yes, that's what I'm talking to now. We have applications from, firstly, the minister who's attending the accountability session with Home Affairs. Portfolio committee, I think that leads to scammers. Then we also have an apology due to ill health from the deputy minister, Degani. So those are formally the apologies that I have received on my side, unless I'm leaving anyone out, actually.
And that's the only apologies, Chairperson.
Okay. So these are the apologies we have, but I can confirm that there is representation from the department. There is, I see on the platform, there is representation from SASA. They will be able to listen to those concerns that I would raise in the next presentation, so that they can also update their responses for the next meeting in that score. Having said that, I'm sure with regards to Centec, they should be ready to present, but given that it's an entity that reports to the department, I'll check if they are bringing the mic from the department to introduce the Centec, and then allow Centec in that score to present in the way they've arranged the presentation. But given that members would have received the presentation and went through it, we'll give maximum 15 minutes for that, so that the members can engage before we listen. I check if the department wants to introduce the
thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members, CEO, Executive Caretaker, as the members of the public are here, and also members of Outer that are here. Chair, we present to you Centec, one of our entities. As you know, that Centec is a signal distributor, amongst others, and Centec is currently one of the entities that is being earmarked for a repurposing and merger with EBI. Centec is also, as you know, recent weeks has signed an agreement with USASA to actually manage the set-top box that have been sitting at South African Post Office. So in the last couple of years, we would know as honorable members that Centec has been performing fairly well, but we need Centec, if we are looking futuristically, that Centec has to be ready for the future, and we present to you that Centec must present itself as to how it goes about looking at its signal distribution cost structure, and as you requested, and how it relates to especially the its biggest client, which is the South African Broadcasting Corporation. Thank you, Chairperson. I wish the committee on its deliberation the best in your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. May we then hand over to Centec to proceed.
Good morning. morning, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, and all the attendees. My name is Malande Tonjeni. I am representing the Board of FinTech. I am also representing the Chairperson, Dr. Sandile Malinga of the Board, who has sent his apologies. He's hosting an AGM at his workplace this morning and is unable to attend. With me today are the executives at FinTech, the CEO, Mr. Mlamli Boyi, the COO, Mr. Tebogo Leshoke, the CFO, Ms. Fujani Rusani Rafikinya, and the company secretary, Mr. Lilo Matane. The CEO will be presenting on the signal distribution cost, and I'd like to hand over to the CEO to start the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Director. Honorable Chair and members, we thank you for the opportunity to come and submit our explanation and presentation to the committee as requested. As the Director Tonjeni has said, we have a team of executives who are going to be assisting me
Sorry, I'm going to talk about the background noise. Also, I think he has something else open. He must shut that. Budget.
Thank you, Honorable Sandam. Also, I thought it's me alone. I'm having that problem. It would appear it's a problem for all of us. Look at probably even the other gadgets that may be open around you, because we get an echo sound coming back.
Apologies, Chairperson. I trust that the feedback has been eliminated. Can you please indicate if that is the case from your side?
Yeah, not on my side. There's still background noise. I'm not sure if honorable members are hearing you clear.
Still there, Chairperson. The background noise is still there.
We can work on that.
Chairperson, are you able to hear me at the moment without the feedback noise?
Yeah, I think we can proceed from now. It's not bad now. Yeah, we can proceed.
Better. Thank you very much. Therefore, you can maybe put it on slide. So, thank you, members. Separate the rooms. Yeah, please. Sorry, I think the challenge of feedback here, we're sitting in the same boardroom and we try to...
That's why I was saying other cases are open.
Okay, thank you. Maybe you can go to the other slide, Tebogo. Yes, Chair, we have been requested, we'll try and be brief and concise on our presentation. We've been requested by the committee, I trust that all can hear me now, to present to you the signal distribution taxonomy, which is really the framework of the structure of our tariffs for signal distribution, specifically relating to the SABC. So we've kept the document really sufficiently concise so that we can just address the questions that the strategic and level that the community would want to. So we'd like to just demonstrate to you how we have been managing our relationship with the SABC maybe address some of the challenges which they have put in the public space about the Sentex distribution business and how it relates to their long-term financial sustainability. I would like to ask our COO to just drill down into the area of our tariffs and how it is structured, and then we will take the question. I'll come back and conclude it then we'll take the questions thereafter. Thank you, Chairperson. Jericho.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and committee members. Yes, we present to you the SABC costs with the main objective of reflecting on the current costs and also touch on some of the current initiatives that we have engaged on with the SABC to try and relieve the SABC from some of the financial challenges. We also in this presentation explore some of the future options that we have been engaging on with the SABC. We need to upfront say that this the detail of this presentation has been shared with the SABC. It's the base of an ongoing conversation and engagement with the SABC. Chair, this first slide, I try to reflect in terms of the scale and scope of services that Centec is providing to the SABC. It's quite a huge scale, understanding the SABC's mandate and responsibility to inform and educate the public and citizens of South Africa. We have various platforms and various technology to actually enable the SABC as a key customer of Centec and a public broadcaster to fulfill its mandate. So on this slide, we show the various platforms. They're starting with the DTT, the Digital Terrestrial Transmission. This is an evolution technology that has been adopted by many countries across the world. As you know, it's slightly behind time, but the value thereof is quite important to move the country into the future of media technology. The second platform is the direct-to-home. Direct-to-home, as you all may understand, is what is being received via satellite technology. You will need a dish to receive this on the DTT site. You will need an aerial. It's a much more cost-effective for the user option on the DTT site to receive media services. We then have the incumbent technologies, analog TV and the analog radio. This is what the majority of the country is still reliant on, for particularly for radio. So we quite reliant on the analog services and halfway, maybe quarter way through migration into digital space. We are starting with the digital radio technology, still fairly on a trial stage and established in Joburg and other parts of the country, mainly for trialing and ready to commercialize it very soon. We've also deployed for the SABC OTT and streaming platform. This will enable the SABC to move into the future of media evolution. So how we look at it, we position and develop platforms and solutions to really provide the SABC with universal digital platforms to enable the SABC to fulfill its public mandate. In the next slide, we try to reflect the extent of coverage of the SABC as provided by Centec. Starting on the top right of the slide, we talk about analog television there. We have about 792 distribution points across the country to generate about 92% especially for the SABC across the country. Then the top right is the national radio coverage. Similarly, quite an extensive network with 769 distribution points. The future digital migration project and distribution points has two multiplexes, one for the SABC and community broadcasters, and one for ETV and MNET. It consists of 182 distribution points. And for the SABC, we also have one medium wave transmission point in the Eastern Cape. This is complemented by the direct home and producing 100% coverage for South Africa. With digital migration, I think the country made a decision to ensure every citizen of this country have access to information and media services. So in terms of the layer of the services, the extent of the SABC services and coverage across the country, country, you would have witnessed and experienced the service. You can wake up and choose your radio of choice, and you are easily able to receive the service. Now, this is just really a summary of what I've been presenting, saying this is the platform and the base of Centex enablement with SABC mandate. And from our perspective, the SABC has the biggest media assets with 19 radio stations and 5 TV stations. From each of the distribution points, the SABC will average about 5 to 10 radios with 3 TVs, more or less. And then majority of South Africans relies on SABC services for information. And yes, we take this responsibility very serious. We manage this platform continuously and ensure that the SABC services are continuously available. We have various management centers across the country to ensure the fulfillment of this service. From our model perspective, as you may know, we are Schedule 3B. Of course, the main objective is to be self-sustainable. We observe the pillars of corporate sustainability from economic, bottom line, environmental and social. And we're not expecting any bailout. We try to manage for sustainability so that we can fund our own operations on an ongoing basis. The main key customers are public broadcasters, commercial broadcasters, community broadcasters. We also have facility sharers and connectivity customers from the portfolio of customers from a Centex perspective. We are a good corporate citizen as an organization. We manage our finances with efficiency and effective governance process. This has enabled us to achieve 8 consecutive clean audits. Chair and colleagues, we continue to honor the service levels with our customers. The set targets of 99.8 availability, we continue to deliver on that year to year, and we continue to consistently look at innovative ways of moving our customers into future technology and making the cost of delivery lesser. And these are some of the things, really, that our tariffs take into consideration, Chair and colleagues. In the next slide, we present to you the signal distribution cost, looking at all services that we provide to the SABC. So we provide, as I highlighted earlier, the DTH, public, and then there's DPT, public, there's FM, there's medium wave, and then there's this analog TV. The combined cost to the SABC per month is 72 million and per annum is 869 million. This is as a result of an extensive network that the SABC has and its responsibility as a public broadcaster. From a Centex perspective, we're cognizant of the costs of the SABC, and on an annual basis, we proactively provide the SABC with a 2% discount on their terms. This year, our board resolved to give the SABC an additional 3.7%, taking into consideration the current financial situation of the SABC. So the total discount given to the SABC this year is 5.7% share and portfolio committee members. There are other initiatives that we also offering the SABC during the lockdown and the crisis management. We provided the SABC a disaster recovery facility at the cost of Centex. This was amounting to about 5 million, taking into consideration the importance of sustainability of the SABC for public interest and its mandate and the Centex mandate. And we continue to explore alternatives of how we can further reduce the cost of the SABC, understanding the situation that the SABC finds itself in. We also gave the SABC a 3-month holiday payment amounting to 215 million. It's unfortunate the SABC defaulted on the arrangement, but we're trying to catch up on this arrangement shift. The next slide, we reflect the main cost drivers of the tariff of the SABC, and really trying to reflect that the key drivers are technology management, satellite capacity, and energy. Energy is a key input, satellite is a key input. The technology and infrastructure is also very, very important. And then lastly, we have the human capital, you know, the people that we need to manage this technology and ensure continuity of services there. So on the left, I have the cost contributors, and on the right, the percentage of each of those cost contributors. I'll focus on the significant one, looking at the satellite capacity rental. It contributes about 27% of the overall cost of the tariff. Then we have energy, about 13%. And then we have the human capital costs at about 37%. The rest are less than 10%. Quite critical, the maintenance. You have to manage the platform and the services to ensure it is available tomorrow and able to carry the services forward. So one of the emerging cost contributors is security. The vulnerability of the assets there needs to be lowered. So we are also starting to incur asset security costs as a result. And then, Chair, we also look at what can be done going forward. And we looked at the technology efficiency for both technical and financial brought by the digital migration process, and put it side by side in the exploring the options of going forward. So in this slide, we try to reflect what the digital migration process brings about from a financial efficiency perspective. So if you look at the overall, what we're saying here, once we migrate or conclude analog switch off, immediately the SABC realized 27% savings on an annual basis. A lot of money. It's about 130 million rand that can go back into the SABC's P&L. It can be redirected to either content or whichever needed part of the SABC for better sustainability by the SABC. So really here the key message is the sooner we get to analog switch off, the better it is for the situation that the SABC find itself in, and we're working very closely with the SABC to collaborate and find the soonest methodology to get to that point, as it will give back the SABC financial relief there. There are also some alternatives. The SABC has engaged us with other alternatives, satellite, DTH, which we say yes, maybe it's something that we can engage on, but we do not see it as a viable option in the immediate term. We believe that yes, medium to long term, it could be explored. We could maximize responsibly so as the public entities to still make sure that we maintain the public services there, the mobility and agility that is required by this design, the information and technology sovereignty that is provided by the technology that we have outlaid already, the fulfillment of the long-term strategy of ensuring that we are purely sovereign from a technology perspective and not reliant on external country and frontier providers there. We also just included here our tariff design methodology, which is internationally benchmarked. What we do, we take the base of our assets and the cost of building this service, and we add a small margin with the pass-through cost, and that's what becomes a tariff towards the SABC. Beware, of course, the legacy cost, the existing infrastructure, which is extensive and requires to be maintained going forward. You know what the extent of the tower and the lay of them are. They normally place right on top of the mountain, so maintaining the infrastructure itself, the buildings, the towers, the roads that goes up there, does require a little bit of financial spend on them. So we took them a historic cost, reevaluate those at the depreciation. We took the primary cost, the direct cost, and the human capital there and other direct costs and overheads to really derive the tariff. That's what becomes the Stansec revenue and aid tariff to the SABC. The energy cost and the satellite cost, they mostly, the other costs, we realize that we cannot make margins on them, so we therefore formulate them as pass-through costs towards the SABC. Yes, in conclusion, Chairperson, we really just trying to reflect what the biggest cost drivers are, being satellite and human capital. And for us to be successful, we really need to ensure that those costs are recovered and to ensure that the SABC's vast geographic terrain remains covered there. We've been now aware of the SABC's plea. We're engaging with them in terms of future alternatives, and we're working on those. And we continue to find also further alternatives in terms of what can be done to further lower the SABC costs. But for us to remain sustainable, really we need to recover our costs from our customers. I think that's the key message we're trying to reflect on this slide. We remain committed, Chairperson, to serve the public and the SABC with reliable services. We remain committed, Chair, honourable members, to evolve the SABC and the technology for South Africa media aspects to really place the country in the front of technology use and lead in terms of adoption of the latest technology there. We thank you very much. We will engage in questions.
Thank you.
I think I do want to, as the last word from Center, to emphasize our commitment to universal access to media content, our extensive network that we have built over the years is targeting at making sure that each and every person in each and every village and township and suburb of this country can access to public service content. So we are committed to support the SABC in delivering on its public mandate, and we will continue to do so and to engage with them. But I do want to emphasize that we are a scheduled tribune, and therefore we need to be sustainable. We don't have the luxury of going treasury to ask for bailout, and therefore we must make sure that we manage our finances responsibly. And thank you for the opportunity to present our case, and we shall pause and take questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CEO. May I then invite members to engage the session from Centre? If I can double check, yeah, I see there are also hands. I know you, Honourable Fondam. I see there are also hands that are on the system. Just help me, Ajira, also on your side.
Mr.
I do see Honourable Mackenzie's hand. As I said, unless I'm leaving you, Honourable Members, please indicate if your hand is up and you are not noted.
Ms. Falco, Chairperson.
No, I have seen that hand before. Honourable Falco, Honourable Fandam, Honourable Mackenzie, Honourable Mtembo. Honourable Mtembo, can you hear? You'd follow
on.
So can we then take those hands for now, and then other members may still want to come in if it be. Honourable Fagu, followed by Honourable Fandam, Honourable Mackenzie, then we have Honourable Mtembo, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First, I appreciate the presentation that we have received. Chair, I apologize, my network is very bad, my camera will be off. Chair, let us appreciate the presentation from Zentech. I think we need to appreciate the good work that Zentech has been doing. I think that one entity that is performing very well, and I think that the committee will be consistent to say that we really appreciate the effort that Zentech is doing. Let us appreciate the effort that Zentech has taken to be able to evaluate with the SABC. I think that is very important, as the CEO has indicated. I think as a committee, let us appreciate that negotiation, because SABC has been crying about the high tariff.
Lost Honorable Faku. Honorable
okay,
Faku.
I'm back. I lost
okay, yes.
Chair, can you hear me?
Yeah,
so I think let us appreciate the work that Zentech is doing, Chair, but also appreciate the effort that Zentech has taken to be able to sit down with the SABC and look at ways on how they can work together, but also try and reduce costs. And in doing so, I hope, CEO, that at the end of the day, you would not sacrifice Zentech in that process, because you want it to be sustainable as well as you have to assist the SABC. I appreciate the effort today. I'm a bit worried, perhaps, because SABC is trying to move away from GTT, which for me is kind of a concern. Can you tell us if do we have capacity as a country if SABC goes to the route of DTH? Because for me, I think in terms of the policy directive, DTH is what is the way to go. And I think that I've went through a workshop that was offered by VETS, and VETS was very clear on DTH. When we're part of that, if do you think we have capacity in terms of satellites that if SABC will go that route of leaving GTT and go that route, but also if SABC ever thinks that maybe they want to leave Zentech and join, because they are saying that there are service providers who can offer much cheaper costs than what we are currently offering. But let us appreciate, but also part of your presentation at the bottom, at the conclusion, as you are saying that, I just want to understand in terms of the cost that, or the debt that SABC is currently owing you guys, Zentech, what is the process that you negotiated in terms of how will they pay? Because you are saying that they have not paid you for quite some time. What is the process with regard to the entities change?
Thank you, Honorable Faku. Honorable Fandau, I hope you can hear.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just feeling a little bit unwell today, so I'll keep my camera off if you don't mind. So my question to Zentech is as follows. So, what percentage of your revenue comes from the SABC? And the SABC said to us, they either need you, sorry, let me just find the numbers. I had their presentation open from last week. Apologies, Chair, I just want to speak to what they said directly. They said that they needed you to reduce the cost to 500 million. Is that a possibility? And is there a legal obligation for the SABC to use your services? So those are the questions I want to know. How much are you dependent on SABC? What percentage are you dependent on from the SABC? is the SABC legally obligated to use Syntex services? And then, obviously, I would like to congratulate you for how well you run Syntex. 8 consecutive clean audits is not something you come across quite often in government SOEs. So that is indication of an entity that is very, very well managed. And it's very good to see. But this issue with the SABC, I think we need the SABC to survive, you know, because it plays a very, very big and important role in our democracy, in terms of public education, in terms of providing entertainment to people who cannot afford streaming or DSTV. So yeah, just those two questions. Thanks, Jay.
We now go to Honorable Kent, who will be followed by Honorable
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, colleagues. Good morning, everybody, and good morning, Mr. Boyce, specifically, and Mr. Shortley. Very nice to see you. Thank you very much for the presentation from both of you. I must echo what my colleague Honorable Van Dunn said. In all the time I've sat in this committee, whenever Syntex has come before the committee to present your APPs or your financial reports, it's always been an absolute pleasure to deal with a government entity that not only maintains their clean audits, but you can see the entity is cohesive, it is targeted, it is focused, and it is well run. And that's testament, I think, to the caliber of the board and the caliber of the management and the people you employ. So I'd also like to echo my colleagues' congratulations in that regard. In terms of the merger with BVI, you know, BVI's biggest problem whenever they've come before the committee has been a lack of capital. They've always had a problem being adequately resourced in terms of financing. Now, we know that one of the things that particularly impressed me as an ex-financial man about Syntex was that all your borrowings were internal. You didn't go outside to look for funding. So you maintained an excellent distribution network, you invested in new infrastructure, and all of your, as far as I understand it, all of these programs were funded internally. So, you know, that's an incredible track record to boast of. Given the capital requirements you need in your business to maintain the excellence that you're renowned for, with the BVI merger, firstly, can you tell me when you anticipate that happening? And what is the impact, do you think, that is going to have on the capital requirements for Syntex BVI, the new company? Is that going to affect you negatively or positively, and have you done any modeling on that score? Then secondly, congratulations again, Mr. Boy, for not approaching government in this very difficult time for a bailout. And I think that's what Syntex is known for. And I'm really proud of you guys, man, in the middle of this crisis. Can you tell me, in terms of revenue percentages, just to build on what my colleague Honorable Van Dunn was saying, she asked for a revenue split between the SABC and others. Can you tell me what percentage of your revenue is derived from community media? How are community media paying previously compared to this time of crisis during COVID national lockdown? Has this affected your collections from community media? And have you taken any steps to assist community media during this very difficult time? I ask this question bearing in mind that you haven't approached government for any funding. So, you know, whatever answer you give is great. Then the SABC has arrived before the committee, and we understand the essential nature of the SABC, and pointed to, obviously looking to cut costs across the board, and has pointed to Syntex as the major cost inhibitor on the organization, on the SABC, and their return to profitability and sustainability. Do you think the answer to the rather high, the enormous amount of money you charge the SABC, do you think the answer to that is the switch off of analog? Because from what I saw on the slide presentations, it looks as if that's going to make a huge difference to the money paid by SABC to Syntex. If you can just provide clarity on that. And then in terms of your tariff model, it looks eminently sensible to me. If I was running your business, I would want that kind of model and just pass on your costs. Can you tell me what, and I don't want to put you in a compromised position here. So if this information is confidential, you can give it to the committee in writing. But could you just give me an idea of what your margin is, please, in terms of that that tariff model you apply? That's it. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable McKenzie. I will now take Honourable Tembo.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Greetings to you. Please, Chair, allow me not to open my camera due to a poor network. I was covered by the previous speakers, but I just want to applaud Semtech for enjoying 8 consecutive clean audits. That's not something we cannot appreciate. It is something amazing. I wish other departments are doing the same. Thank you so much, Chair.
Am I leaving any other member?
No, Chair.
Honorable Mlala, yeah, so that I don't see your hand in the system, that's why I want to check if I'm leaving any member. You can come in, Honorable Mlala.
Yeah, thanks,
So Honorable Pambo has convinced you otherwise. Okay, so I proceed to Honorable Mlala.
And it's very quiet, Pambo. I don't know why. You must raise his hand. I want to hear you. Thanks, Chair. I must first also join my colleagues to congratulate Semtech. I think you guys are doing well. Where I'm sitting, I'm a bit worried that you're doing well and others are saying no, but you are charging, you're overcharging them. So we need to balance the two because you need to continue doing well and also look at how best we can assist. But I just want to do a follow-up on the one issue that was raised by Honorable Van Damme, that SAPC wants you guys to reduce costs by 500 million. If you could indicate what that 500 million means to your income, your 800 million that you said over a period of a year, what does that 500 million mean? And I also want that the department to also, because it looks like the department is mediating in your dispute, is becoming CCMP. So I also want the department to comment whether this concern of the SAPC is reasonable or rational in their view, because you guys are engaged in closed meetings. The other issue that I also need to make a follow-up on is that the SAPC is also threatening to leave you guys for the cheaper services. Now the question I want to ask you is, who are those cheaper service providers that are out there? Are they private? And what are the implications of this move in terms of security of the network? Because we can't then privatize everything, including information. We just need to know what are the implications. If they decide, because their board has got powers, they can decide. if either the department or Semtech can give us an indication that what are the implications of SAPC moving out of Semtech, because they are threatening that they will do that. From where I'm sitting, it will be bizarre, but I'm not in the board of the SAPC. It will be bizarre for SAPC as a government entity to move away from another government entity. and opt for private on matters that have got implications on security of the network. And so I just not both network and information, because the information that SABC is providing, it's South African information. Now, we can't have all our information just being spread all over the world without knowing which one is relevant and so on. So those are my few questions, and then I'll come back maybe after the response. Thanks, Chair.
I'll now take
Thank you very much, Chair, and also let me greet all members, the delegation from the CENTEC, and also delegation from the department. And also, Chair, let me join the queue to appreciate and thank the CENTEC, because it shows the commitment that is within on the issue of getting a successful clean audit. This is not a child's play. And indeed, it will tell you to say they are doing their work with passion. And also, let me thank, because I can hear they are having a pride of saying it's a priority to them on the side of their clients when coming to the issue of relations, and also on the side of the services chair. But I think other members have tried to cover me. But I want just to hear, Chair, on the side of the CENTEC, hence they have tried also to make some means and some moves on the side of trying to cover the SABC. As they are saying, they have managed during the lockdown time, try to give the SABC that 3 months holiday certificate, and also by saying they were prepared also to go to up to the amount of 250 million, just to make a discount on that side of the SABC. But as other members are concerned today, is it possible indeed on the side of the CENTEC, as SABC is raising today, can they be up to that 500 million? Is it possible on their side to be in this manner of saying they will manage even to work as they are usually working, when they can agree to give the SABC that discount of that amount? And also let me support on the side of saying, I think on the side of the DGT, on our side, it's a priority, Chair, and we are supporting, because as Honorable Fabu was raising today, it's not only South Africa. On the side of the DGT, all the African countries were prioritizing actually to use the issue of DGT. So is it possible, as they do, as they can also move or try to focus especially on the side of the DGT instead of this one of DGT? So let's thank indeed to say CENTEC is committed, as it rate sharply, so to say, it is not prepared even at a certain stage where it will go to the treasury for the issue of the bailout. Let them just like that continue, but I think it can be much more better if even in other entities that we are having in our department, just some advice in order that even those entities, they can push just like CENTEC. Thank you, Chair.
Kubeka, I would allow CENTEC to respond, as well as I think there was a question from Honorable Mlala with regard to the department, if the department would want to respond to that now. But CENTEC, as you respond, just on the part that relates to satellites, if you can also give the committee a sense, other than the SABC, what other broadcasters are using, are they on satellite? If not, what could be the reasoning behind that? And if they are there, would that mean that indeed what the SABC raises on its side then becomes a valid point that you look for something that's cheaper, that's cool. So that's as your response, if you can also just give us a sense in terms of your other clients, what's happening with them in that regard. The second point, just to again take the point about DTT to another level, that in your presentation you are indicating that the switch of analog to DTT would yield a 27% cost reduction on the side of the SABC. Maybe if you can also elaborate that point so that we know whether SABC is also paying for such dual munition, or if not, then how is the 27% cost reduction going to be affected? I think that's for me important as the committee seeks to engage the SABC matter, to engage from factual information in that regard. Otherwise, the other points have been raised by members. I'm not sure if the department wants to come in first or give to Centec first. I think PG.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Lala, for that question. Perhaps the question that has been raised has to be understood in the context of where the SABC finds itself at this particular point, wherein that we know, we noted with the SABC presentation last week, that SABC finds itself with a very low average revenue per user, as it has been reported with their figures that they have shown. And they are looking at alternatives in terms of their transmission costs. And in this respect, you would note that the Deputy Minister reported that for the last week's meeting that she has set up a structure wherein SAPC and CENTEC are required to do an audit of the transmitters, and actually to ensure that both parties receive the best value. Because you would realize, Honorable Mulala, that SABC, for instance, when they are talking about average revenue per user, they still have the same transmitters, but they are not realizing the same revenue as we have said, let's say, maybe 15 years ago, but the transmitters are still the same. Then even when it came to the deployment of DTT, the deployment of DTT, presumed that there was going to be growth in terms it actually mirrored the transmitters of the SABC, whereas the SABC revenue did not grow at the same level as the cost of having a transmitter. So you have that that challenge as with the SABC. So I would ask the committee to, through the chair, allow that process to unfold, and then once it's done, we come back with being led by the Deputy Minister and say, this is the result of that process, this is the transmitters that the SABC is going to offload, this is the price that is going to be reduced if that's the possibility. So that's what I would suggest as a possibility, that we allow that process to unfold. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for now.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We do want to appreciate the comments and encouraging words from the members of the committee. It is a tough world out there, and we are trying, with the help of the shareholder, with the also commitment of our customers, to deliver the service to this nation. And I do want to emphasize the fact that SABC is a very important customer of Stentec, and we are bound by a contractual agreement between ourselves, that is Stentec and the SABC. And so we do appreciate the business that SABC has been graciously able to give us at Stentec, to provide them with the service of signal distribution. So we'll take the questions, Chairperson, as they came. First of all, there was a question around the debt of the SABC. I will ask CFO to speak to the debt question, and then we'll come, we'll go step by step. Thank you, sir.
Good morning, everyone. The debt, as at the end of the September, was sitting at around over 300. So SABC defaulted firstly on the payment holiday that was given to them. Further to that, they defaulted on the July invoice. Since then, we've been in engagement with them, and they've identified that they can only pay us, they first said they will only be able to pay us 50 million rand a year. And we indicated to them that will not be able to cover all our costs, and therefore we will not be able to accept that, because it doesn't even cover the monthly invoices of 72 million. Then they came back and they indicated that they will only be able to pay 60 million. And then we then said to them they need to go back, because that also does not cover the monthly invoices. At least if they are covering the monthly invoices, and we talk about the debt arrangement over a period, and we were willing, we've given them a payment plan where we didn't want to go beyond the 31st of March, because that's our year end, and if you've got a huge debt in your books, that complicates the finances or the financial statements that we will submit to the auditors for audit. So we are at that stage where they've indicated the 60 million, and we've gone back to them that at least if they can cover the entire monthly invoices, then we talk about the debt going forward. And that's where we are. At the end of October, end of September, they settled the September invoice, but they also paid an additional amount of around 20 million, which then offset the debt. So that's the only amount that they have paid towards the debt so far. So we are in constant engagement with them in terms of how we can assist them. Thank you.
Chairperson, we definitely have no doubt that SABC is committed to honor their financial obligations, and we do want to indicate that we appreciate the financial difficulties which the management of the SABC is facing, and we are not unsympathetic to that. I think we've demonstrated that commitment by being relatively flexible, because we're dealing with a public broadcaster and we belong to the same shareholder. But we don't want it to be misinterpreted as if we are ignoring our contractual obligation between ourselves and the SABC. There was a question asked by Honorable Van Damme on what is the revenue, what is the business of that we actually giving or getting from the SABC. Let me put it that way. Before I give you the percentage, let me give the context. I think the COO, Senator Kolishop, has indicated the extent to which the SABC is a dominant player in the electronic media space with those assets which they
They own the whole 19 radio stations and 4 or 5 television stations, which they have an obligation to cover the whole country. So that mandate then puts a burden on them and obviously demand on us to be able to deliver to the SABC the national coverage which they require. As a result of that, the revenue from the SABC or the business of the SABC is just over 60%. So if you look at it, it's a 60-40, SABC 60 plus, and other entities account for 40% plus minus business revenue to Stentec. If they are aiming to reduce that business by 500 million, is this something that is achievable? We do think that it is a process that has to be undergone by SABC and shareholder, and it also will have to speak to issues of what network or services are they planning to maybe to terminate, if you will. But it is an issue that we're still discussing with the SABC, and I do want to also indicate that we're dealing with our customer here, so we want to be sensitive on the information we're sharing with the committee without ignoring the fact that this is Parliament. We must account transparently. So the issue of 500 million is really going to be very, in fact, we can't achieve it immediately. That we can tell you right away, it is impossible. But it is a journey that we can traverse together with the SABC and to see how close can we get to that over the years. And what binds them to us, apart from the contractual agreement for us to deliver signal distribution content, I think they have a license from ICASA which indicates who the signal distributor is, and also I think there is a policy requirement on them to use the services of Stentec, but I think that one I'm subject to correction by the department. There was another question that was raised by Honorable Faku, saying that how do we then deal with the fact that SABC wants to move away from Stentec, and is there capacity on satellite that will allow them to move away from Stentec from a television perspective? And then I think it's very important for us to know that, you know, we first of all, we don't own satellite, and therefore the capacity available on the hotbed that is being used by the other broadcasters on this part of the world, as far as we have been informed by our supplier of the satellite capacity, there is no spare transponder that is available for anyone who wants to go to satellite on the same satellite which we are currently using, which would make sense because you don't want to put your content on a different satellite, because then people will have to repoint their antennas, and that becomes very difficult to achieve, and it can disrupt the SABC's customers, viewers. But we don't know the details. I'm sure the members can ask the SABC as to which satellite user would they go to should they want to move to satellite and away from Stentec. As far as we're aware, and we know enough satellite space to say categorically that in the capacity available on satellite, there is not sufficient or spare capacity that SABC can maybe use immediately, unless if they maybe contract satellite company to launch another satellite onto the same orbital location, so that they can be able to use that capacity and not disrupt their viewers. The question raised by Honorable Mackenzie briefly, when is the measure of PBI and Stentec? I will ask that Shebesnen ask DG to answer that question, because it is driven by the department. We are participants and affected parties, and as far as that is concerned, have we modeled this? It is work in progress between the BBI, Broadband Infracos Stentec, and the department, where we're looking at how this measure would work, but I would prefer to leave it to me main driver of that project, which is the DG's office and the DCDT. You asked the question, Honourable Mackenzie, about the community broadcasting services. What did we do during the lockdown and difficult times? I mean, as it happened to most of our customers who asked us for a reprieve or a payment holiday or deferred payment, the CRBs were amongst those who community broadcasters were amongst those who asked us for a payment holiday, which we granted. But I have to say it here on the public record that we've struggled over the years to get revenue from the community broadcasters. Currently, the debt of the community broadcasters sits above 60 million, and then we're battling to get the community broadcasters to pay their debt. But that is a process that is being handled by the department and all those who are supporting the community broadcaster. The issue of switching off analog is not the answer. Yes, we have indicated in our presentation that it will give the SABC a significant benefit in terms of the cost effectiveness of signal transmission. So they will save over 120 million when we switch off analog. So the sooner we do this, the better. And who pays? I mean, are they paying for the dual illumination? I think the members asked that question as well. No, there is no broadcaster who is paying for dual illumination. This cost is covered by the FISCAS. It's an allocation that is paid for by the FISCAS. And that's the only allocation that we receive from government for covering that cost until such time that we switch off analog. So if we do, or when we do switch off, it will be a great saving to the fiscals and also a great saving to the SABC. And therefore, we would like to encourage members to keep us accountable in terms of when is this switch off going to happen. And Honourable Mackenzie, I would like to leave the question of margins as a confidential information. Suffice to say that we are a public entity and our margins are really pedestrian. We don't charge high margins, but we can supply that information to the committee in writing. I think there was a question asked about by Honourable Mulala. I think I've answered the 500 million rand question. If SABC was to terminate 500 million rands now, say whatever happens, SABC and Centeb want to cut 500 million, it would have huge implications to the business of Centeb. In fact, it would be very detrimental to the long-term survival of Centeb as an organization. You asked the question, I'll ask the COO to come in there, but you asked the question around the who are these competing operators which the SABC is claiming that they would go to get a cheaper signal distribution service and so on. Unfortunately, I couldn't answer that because I'm sure that's confidential information to the SABC. We don't have that information. I'm sorry, Honourable, I can't answer that. But I just asked the COO to come in into the issue of the implications of that reduction,
500 million, and other signal distribution questions.
Thanks,
Thank you. Thank you, Mlamli. Yes, Honorable Chair, Committee Members. Yes, I think the engagement we've been having with the SABC in terms of the model vehicle we can follow to adopt to reduce their costs, we're not coming close to 500 million, so there is a slight misalignment between the financial objectives and the technical objectives and discussions that we have had. We're still working on this to see how best can we come closer to. But I think the general question from the committee is the viability of 500 million and its implication on Centec. Yes, I think from where we're sitting, it is clear that the 500 million reduction cannot be achieved without reduction of services from the SABC side. It needs to be clear from our side that we will have to cut some services if this is going to be the way we are going to it will have implications on Santec as an entity. We have invested about 2 billion rands on the asset pool for DTT migration. We have been incurring dual illumination costs. So we're talking roughly an investment of over 3 billion rands that is already sitting there. So there will then be impairment of that asset. It is not something that any investor or the government wishes to go through. There is a risk of job losses associated with that. You have legacy costs to manage. If you lose the revenue and the legacy cost and the direct cost issues are exposed there. And we will also not wish to go through this, as it will be contrary to the objectives of the economic recovery and jobs creations and not at this stage. And the model that is also being funded does push the cost to the public, to the viewer. It is cost effective to receive via DGT, as we all understand that the receiving via DGT, you need a dish and then the maintenance and management and the failure thereof is quite more frequent, then the cost will then be pushed to the viewer there. So it is also not something by design. We preferred a cost-effective technology that is also giving us some level of sovereignty. We are designing and we want to move the country towards a more fully technology sovereign country. Our initiatives of moving content contribution away from satellites to fiber to ensure that we are not relying on external parties will be reversed if we move to satellite. So that needs to be noted. But our discussions and our view on this matter has been, cost reduction is not the only solution. I think we need to explore more alternatives. We cannot just revert to one. This is taking into consideration that the SABC has in the past been able to afford this. So we see that there is an opportunity and potential there. If the SABC could maybe focus on the top line growth, it could also be one contributing element there. We are not opposed to cost reduction, but we're saying let's do it responsibly. We will engage with the SABC so that we do not affect the public service going out there. And the third element that we see is possible shareholder intervention. It's a process, of course. But we're looking at three things that could possibly alleviate the SABC situation, being the shareholder intervention, cost reduction and optimization from Santec, probably so, and some element of revenue growth from the SABC. So there are three things that we are looking at, which we will recommend that the balance thereof be considered as a means to drive sustainability for the SABC. Thank you.
Thank you. For the last question asked by the Honourable Chair on what other broadcasters are on satellite, I think we're all aware that we have in this country two operators, the subscription operator DSTV and also the OBAT, which is an ETV and NTS. So those are other operators in the satellite space that we are aware of. But internationally, we know that countries like Spain and the UK are still on both platforms, on the DTT platform and also itself in Spain, DTT is big, migrated a while ago, no use of set-top boxes, but integrated TV sets. So we don't necessarily think that DTT is a dead technology, but we don't deny the fact that it is more costly than when you use satellite. That cost has been incurred already, and no revenue has been generated from that investment, and I'm sure government would want to recoup that investment, unless if then it's decided that the writing of 1.8 to 2 billion rands, which is not desirable. Chair, I think we've covered the questions asked of us. But yes, I think there was a question around the 27 million achievement. We covered that question. 27%
27% discount as a result of the analog switch off. We cover that question. It's going to. Sorry, thank you for your
Yes, I think we can clarify it further. Thank you, Mlamis. So I think the chair wanted to understand when is the 27% realizable from a DTT perspective. It is progressively, chair, than when we switch off analog. So the SABC is not paying for two networks. The dual illumination allocation takes care for that. They only pay for one network. It is either analog or digital. When we move them to digital, we charge them a digital tariff and we drop the analog tariff. So even when they move to digital for that particular distribution point, they will immediately realize 27% on that. And at the end of analog analog switch off, then the SABC will recurringly year on year realize that benefit. So that is the model of that delegate. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. We'll hand it back to you.
Secret information. So can you please give me an answer? as the chair always says, we are not here to fight with you or whatever. We are here to help you. But in order to help you, you need to help us to help you. So if you don't tell us how much, you know, your sustainability is reliant on the SABC in the exact figure, how do you expect us to help you? And here is a very cold, hard fact. And that's why you didn't answer this question either. There is no explicit legal obligation for the SABC to use your services. Which means if there is a distributor out there that offers what you offer cheaper, they can go and do that. There's nothing that prevents them from doing so. You know, the Broadcasting Act makes the SABC board the ones that make the final decisions. And in essence, no one can force them to continue to use Syntec beyond whenever your contract ends with them. And the core of truth is that you're going to have to be competitive in such a market. You're going to be able to have to be competitive. And if you're not competitive and your pricing is not competitive, and you, in the same way we always say to the SABC that you need to self-sustain, you need to reconsider your funding model, the same applies to you guys. Because if you lose the SABC as a client, which you can, they have the right to do so, to go out there to the market and find something cheaper. You just have to be competitive, and you need to look at your business model, see what you can do, change your pricing, I don't know, whatever it is, you must come and tell us what your turnaround strategy has to be. So I want to know, what is the percentage of the SABC's contribution to your bottom line? And your pricing, I believe, needs to also be something that is, that goes through a bit of an ICASA regulatory process. And as I understand, it doesn't. You largely set your own prices. There's no oversight in terms of what is essentially a Chapter 9 institution in ICASA. And I think that will have to be something that's considered. Now, if SABC is forced, for example, I don't know what measure would be.
Ajira, can you assist us on that side? It's Mr. Gumbu, it's choice. Sorry? It's Mr. Gumbu. Mr. Gumbu. Can you mute? Yes, please.
Hey, he's listening to some nice music, but not right now.
Tell me, Bossy, can you mute on that side?
I'm going to put that light. It's John I don't want to see a situation where you are taken to the Competition Commission or something like that. So tell me, what percentage is it? How are you going to change? Or maybe you haven't considered this, but it's something you must consider. Given that there is no explicit legal obligation, what are you going to do about your business model? The world is changing, and I believe for SOEs to continue to exist without every year going cap in hand for a bailout to self-sustain, we need to move with the times. And it's the fourth industrial revolution, and you can't stick to the same business model that worked 10 years ago. You need to consider options. You need to sit around the table and think very clearly about what you're going to do going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Fandang. Honorable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Much appreciated. Just to the department, the Acting DG, Mr. Boy referred to a question I asked, just in terms of when you anticipate the BBI merger taking place with Centec, and if you have an opinion on how that will impact on the capital requirements of the new entity. Thank you very much.
So that the SABC and other customers can
be able to afford our services. And I think Honourable Conrad, you persuaded me to answer the question asked by Honourable Mackenzie on the margins, but I'll give you the range because this is what we give to what we do to all our new businesses. When we take up the new business, our range of margin is anything between 12% and 20%. So it is not exorbitant at all. The question asked by Honourable Kumbu, yes, I think we did touch on it. The departure of SABC from Centec, that would mean you cutting off 65% of our business, and that would mean that the shareholder must reduce the expectation of Centec business by that amount. But are we doing anything? I think this is an important question asked by Honourable Vandam. Are we doing anything to be sustainable? Are we changing our business models? Yes, we are. We are working on different business models. Centec is not a classic signal distributor anymore. Centec is and has moved into broadband services as well. And this is where I think the merger of Centec and BBI comes into play. So this entity, as we have it today, will have revenue streams which are not only signal distribution revenue, but other streams such as the broadband services, and also we lease our infrastructure to the industry. So we've got managed infrastructure services as a revenue. So, but that is small in comparison to what we receive from the SABC, simply because of the size of the SABC. So I trust that I have touched on the questions to the satisfaction of the members. The 65%, Honorable Panda, we are in negotiations with the SABC so that we can see how we can bundle the services, not to delay their progression and their migration to digital. So we're discussing about multi-platform situation where they can have streaming services, DTH, DTT, radio, so all those are strategies that we're exploring. I trust that my colleagues have touched on all the questions that have been asked. Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
The department pertaining the issue of moving, and I think on the side of Honourable Mbambo. Hello.
Hello, Ms. Kubeka.
Yes,
Jira. You can proceed. I was just on the line with the chair, he's having problems, so he's going to try to listen in with him because his phone.
Okay.
While he was speaking to me, we were cut off here. So if that's the end of the presentation, Ms. Kubeka, we can proceed to the next one.
Okay. No, not yet finalized with this one of Centec. Can also on the side of the department to respond to the question on the side of the policy, what will happen when SABC decides to move out and all on the side of the Centec. That one, we are still waiting for the department just to come in. But Honorable Mbambo was raising also on the side of the what will happen with the side of the regulations also to Centec. That was the question on the side of Honorable Mbambo also, Chair. Honorable Mbambo?
I think I thought I had asked the question already.
Yes.
Yes, I've already asked it. Unless
I was saying the Centec must come in to respond to your question. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Chair, thank you very much for the question from the Honourable Member there. Yes, from the obligations of the regulations, I think the 2012 DTT migration regulations require the SABC at launch to at least cover 74% via terrestrial network. And at the end of digital migration, it stipulates 95% So there definitely is a need for the SABC to engage the regulator if there's going to be a change in terms of the terrestrial use. I think that part maybe will be up to the regulator to state what the implication is going to be. But the 2012 DTT migration regulations are very clear in terms of objectives and expectations. There is 5%. I think we were proactive in designing for DTH. There was no explicitly DTH initiative. I think it was by our act that we proposed it into the regulation that the DTH option be included to serve as a gap filler. It is being preferred now to be the main, and I think we highlighted the risk earlier in our presentation. Thank you.
Just thank you, Stephenson. I think from our side, I would then hand it over to Ms. Malande, our director, to just conclude it, and we will, we conclude our presentation. Director Malande?
Okay, thank you very much to the committee members. Thank you, Chairperson, as well as the executives. We appreciate the opportunity to have been given the platform to come and present, as well as all the discussions and all the comments. We do take them part, and as the executives have been saying, we will continue to work with the SABC as partners. We will continue to work with the department on the business model on going forward. We are constantly working on that, as well as the BPI merger. If there is no other questions, we would also like to request the chairperson if we can be excused from the other items that follow. Thank you, chairperson.
Chair, I asked a question and I don't think it was responded to.
Okay, Honorable Fauku, I'm still waiting also for the department just to come in on that side. What will happen on the issue of the policy if the Centec is moving out at all on the side of having those working relations with the SABC. I think they will take, were you directing the question to the Centec, Honorable Fagu, or where he was in the department? Can you repeat it again in order that they can come in to respond before they can leave, Honorable Fagu?
Chair, thanks, Chair. I asked a question in my opening remarks about how will the SABC cash up on the Centec debt. I don't know. I did not get a response in that. And also, can Centec afford to reduce the current debt that the SABC has? And I think Honorable Mackenzie has also asked a question to the DG about the merger. If she can respond, I'm also interested with this.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bulfaku. Maybe it's the network. You were lost, but let the Centec respond also to you before the department. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I think the first question, which is how will the SABC catch up on the debt? We are in constant discussions with the SABC. I think they are very transparent about what they can do by when. We've set a deadline, which is the end of the financial year, where we are expecting that the debt must be settled by then. They are working towards that. So I think it's, as things go, as their cash flow improves, and they honestly make every effort to honor their obligation, and we do appreciate that. But the target is that maybe we should close the debt by the end of the financial year. Can we, as Centec, afford to reduce the cost with these orders of magnitude of debt that SABC owes us? The answer, honorable members, is that no, we can't afford that because Centec's business is largely relying on signal distribution revenue, which majority of which is at the SABC. So we do appeal to the government and Treasury to do whatever is possible to assist the SABC to get the funds which they need to be able to run their operations and be able to cover their cost, especially the cost of signal distribution, because without the signal distribution, there is no broadcasting. So us and SABC are kind of linked on the hip or tied on the hip. We are those twins which you cannot easily separate. So we'd like to say we'll work together to do whatever is possible to assist where we can, but we don't have deep pockets, so we cannot assist in funding the cost of signal distribution for the SABC. I do trust that that answers the question. And the question of the manager timelines, I think that was asked. I will ask the DG to help us with answering the timelines question. I have indicated on the modeling that the team department, Stentec and Broadband Infraco, are working on finalizing the business case, but I think it's a project driven by the DG's office. I would leave that to give the details. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and I trust that I've covered all the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I give to the DG?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members. Chair, just wanted to say that the process has been ongoing. We, through the office of DDG Shalembe, we have finalized the business case, and then this business case, as being finalized, and it will be submitted to National Treasury and the Public Service and Administration. Thereafter, we intend drafting a bill which will be consulted on within the economic cluster system. And we anticipate that because there's a progressing economic cluster, then there will be various interests in this regard, such as the DTIC, because of the broadband issues when it comes to broadband infraco. So our target is that the draft bill should be sent to Cabinet by the end of June in 2021. And once Cabinet approves, then we will follow the processes of ensuring that legislative process of Parliament it goes through. And then we target that 2022 to make sure that legislatively, because it has to be a legislative entity, that legislatively wise we are on track and we have legislation that has been tabled before Parliament that will be responsive, and then we'll table that before Parliament. That is our target date. I do not know, DDG Shalembe, if I have missed anything, because it has been left mostly from your office. I am just leading high level. Shalembe?
Thank you, DG, and good day to Chairperson and honorable members and colleagues. I think, acting DG, you have captured the essence of where we are with the merger process, except maybe we can just add that even in the private sector, acquisitions and mergers are the most sophisticated and technical of the corporate restructuring. And given our limited financial resources, we are unable to source in any technical assistance. So we are doing most of the work in-house within the department and the entities in question. So we have, as the acting DG said, we have finalized the business case, which needs to then be approved by the Ministers of Finance and Public Service and Administration. And simultaneously, we are now working on the draft legislation that will need to be
approved by cabinet early next year for submission to parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DDG Shelembe, and also let me send the Zentech, as they are asking to be released much more earlier, to say let's keep on engaging. And I'm happy because now you can see you are having that passion to work with your clients. SMBC is the priority also on your side. With those frustrations that they are tabling, I think when we are keep on engaging one another, finally we will have a resolution actually to resolve how best can you assist the SAPC, because it's a very key on your side a client that you are working with. And also just to thank the department on trying to make these meetings to be in this form when you know that there are those challenges. Each entity must find one another because they know that they are relating to one another. Thanks very much. I can release the Zentech and go over to the side of the USASA, which is the second entity which will present today. Can I also give, before I give to Zentech, I mean to USASA, to check with the DG first before they can present DG?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, with I'm back, Honorable Kubek.
You can continue, Chair, over to you. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a correction that with regard to today's agenda, it is Outer that would present. As we clarified in the beginning of the meeting, USASA and the department are also here to also listen to the presentation in preparation for the feedback that they would need to give us as a response to AUTA. I take it that the AUTA representative is still with us. I saw earlier, given the time constraints we have, we still want to give you your 15 minutes to present, and I'm sure members would thereafter clarify whatever they would need to clarify, understanding that it's not a direct response, because we would need the department and USASA to come back to respond to the matters that have been raised. I'm sure they're ready on the side to proceed there. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable members. We really appreciate this opportunity to make this presentation. It is really an honour. I am Advocate Stefani Hooper, and would like to do this on behalf of the team. Thank you. So let's move on. Maybe if we could do this sort of quickly, we can, if there are any questions, we can deal with those. So the presentation is about the anomalies relating to the broadcasting digital migration program. And let me just start as an introduction of this mandate. It is the challenging and taking action against maladministration and corruption, but it is always about, creating a better South Africa for all. And, you know, although corruption is an illness, we also need to deal with the consequences of corruption, because corruption creates, there's a lot of consequences. Therefore, combating corruption is vitally important. So let me move on. The importance of compliance with legislation is therefore also extremely important to us. For example, the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, which basically highlights transparency,
accountability and recall by government. Let's move to the broadcasting digital migration policy, which is the underlying policy or policy environment for our complaint. Now, the broadcasting digital migration, obviously, I think as this committee will know, is the process of converting the broadcast of television and radio signals for analog to digital technology. Now, in terms of the BDM policy, the rollout of the digital infrastructure aims to achieve the national coverage of digital broadcasting to cover 50% of the population by end of 2008, 80% by 2010, and close to 100% by 2011. We are not even close to accomplishing that. So the broadcasting digital migration policy was to create an environment for the uptake of digital terrestrial television by TV households, including the poor. Society is confronted by a wide range of developmental challenges, such as reducing the digital divide, building social cohesion and a common national identity, poverty and employment creation. So digital broadcasting has the potential to contribute significantly to addressing these challenges. So that's why to implement the digital migration is extremely important. The policy obviously to implement the digital migration within 3-year dual illumination period. So why is out the year? Firstly, civil society has got a very important role in ensuring transparency. You know, a type of a watchdog is needed in a space where accountability may fall short. It's not always meant to revert to the judiciary, but you know, as a last resort, we, you know, sometimes that is the only route. And it is important to look after our state-owned institutions who sometimes have an indifference towards transparency. We are also here to highlight the associated costs with the broadcasting digital migration program and the financial impact of the project's completion being overdue by a lot of years, by, if one takes into account 2011, by 9 years, although there were some concessions made in the years. We are also here to emphasize the lack of proper oversight, because intervention is needed, and that's why we're here, because we do believe that this committee will be able to do that, to ensure accountability. And to put questions, we end off this presentation with a few questions that after our investigation, we still do not have the answers there too, and maybe this committee can make sure that there is clarity on some of the unanswered questions. So the broadcasting digital migration, what is your SASSA's role in the digital migration? You know, SASSA is a public office, like Centec we've heard, as confirmed by Schedule 3A of the PFMA, meaning that is the existence, functions, duty and the mandate of the agency are governed by sections 80-21 of the 91 of the Electronic Communications Act 36 of 2005. Now, the legislative mandate with reference to the ECA include the strive to promote the goal of universal access and universal service, to manage the universal service access, to fund in accordance with the relevant provisions of the Act, to utilize the USAF fund exclusively for the payment of certain subsidies, responsible to disburse, subsidize SPVs to approximately 5 million TV-owning households that are considered needy and deserving. Very important. This is called the needy and deserving. As part of the broadcast digital migration program, SASSA is also required required to, what's required to appoint suppliers, manufacturers, locally produced, and set-top boxes and antennas, from which the set-top boxes are to be procured for distribution to qualifying households through the South African Post Office network, and then also to manage a database of installers, which will be used to provide the set-top boxes installation service to households that qualify. Now the expenditure, which is one of the important, one of the bigger reasons why we are here today making this presentation. During the 2016-2017 financial year, CEDEC has supported the Ministry of Communication in its digital terrestrial television awareness campaign. Dual elimination is the cost associated with running both analog and digital signals, as we heard. The estimated cost for dual elimination for the 2016 financial year was 131 million, and the fund allocated amount was 99 million rand, leaving it a funding deficit of 32 million. Due to the funding deficit caused by dual elimination in the 2016 financial year, the medium-term expenditure framework allocated 140 million for the 2017 financial year and 149 million for the 2018 financial year. USAFA's expenditure for the 2017-2018 financial year exceeded the budget, which was mainly driven by warehousing costs, logistics, distribution expenses relating to the broadcasting digital migration, and legal costs. And still, we still don't have the migration. USAF was established in terms of Section 89 of the ECT Act, Electronic Communications Act of 2005. The fund is managed by USAFA with a total budget for 2017 year, I do apologize, and approximately 80% of this amount was held in relation to the BDM project commitment totaling 1.5 billion rand. To subsidize the provision for qualifying household vouchers, 1.6 billion over the medium term is allocated to USAF, and 275 million rand is allocated to USAFA to compensate the post office for the administration of the project. A further 100 million is allocated to CENTEC in 2021-2022 financial year for dual elimination, allowing the entity to operate both analog and digital signals until the digital migration is fully implemented. As a result, spending in the broadcasting digital migration program is expected to increase from 312.8 million rand in 2019-2020 to 1.4 billion rand in 2021-2022. For USAF, transfers and subsidies, mostly for implementing projects related to the BDM migration in 2020 and 2021, and 2021 and 2022, account for an estimated 98.1%, 2.2 billion rand of a total expenditure over the medium term. The Deputy Minister of Communications, Ms. Pinky Kana, stated that the cost of storing the set-top boxes in the SAPO warehouses has reached about 72 million rand per annum, as there has been little progress with the installation. We also run the following risk. The reality is that set-top boxes may become obsolete if the Department of Communications and Digital Technology does not act soon. Technology does not get better with age. It actually gets worse with age. Now, examples of the impact of wasteful expenditure relating to the BDM program. Storage costs of housing the set-top boxes at SAPO warehouses is equating to 72 million rand per annum, including that the risk of the set-top boxes over time become obsolete, which has its own associated costs. They will become useless. Dual illumination costs for both analog and digital media. Analog switch off is 7 years overdue, resulting in unwanted expenses to service both mediums. Stock control deficiencies have plagued the broadcasting digital migration project, which has an inventory of about 500 million. And by year end, it was found that some equipment could not be located as a result of ineffective stock control, as per USIF's 2018-2019 annual report. The 2015-2016 Auditor General report highlighted possible collusion with regards to the appointed set-top box manufacturers and National Treasury's commissioned PricewaterhouseCoopers to investigate the set-top box tender process. That commissioned report is not made public as of today. Oversight and consequence management is what we think is needed and well overdue. Effective oversight and consequence management is extremely important in ensuring that public services are delivered effectively, efficiently, and with due regard to all South Africa's citizens. Repeated lack of oversight and consequence management led to long-term problems and breakdown in leadership credibility. Holding people accountable, we believe, involves three steps, namely, formulate clear expectations. This is achieved when one obtains agreement by the responsible individuals to meet or exceed set expectations. We need to hold people to account that do not abide by the expectations. What about disciplinary hearings against individuals that is not willing to do their job to the benefit of a better South Africa? Proactive oversight. Create feedback channels to ensure that the team members' internal and external customers can provide progress on task delivery. Gather and review data points, creating confidence in the team members' performance as per the agreed expectation. And then consequence management. Apply the appropriate consequences. If individuals do not deliver on what they committed to deliver, engage and resolve the barrier. Stay committed to the accountability strategy. Holding individuals accountable for their non-performance will ensure that South African citizens will receive higher quality products and services, and the risks associated with wasteful expenditure, maladministration, fraud and corruption will be mitigated. What consequence management was followed? What consequence management was followed? By the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, or USASA, with regards to the wasteful storage costs, poor stock control resulting in financial losses, as well as 5 years of wasteful expenditure with regards to dual illumination. Development and execution of comprehensive migration plan. Stakeholders should be included in the migration planning process, both to foster stakeholder support to the plan and to ensure that the government is incorporating the best possible information. Stakeholders can use the comprehensive digital migration plan as a basis in which all parts can measure implementation progress and success. Address key costs and identify funding sources. Digital migration and migration plans incur significant costs, including new and upgraded broadcasting and transmission equipment, end-user set-top boxes, and consumer awareness programs. Outline a clear spectrum usage plan. The digital migration plan should have a clear vision of spectrum arrangements, both during and after the migration period. Clear and early spectrum planning is the word transmission operators deploying networks. And they ensure consumer awareness. It is crucial that consumers are aware of the migration process and specifically the effect that it will have on them in terms of new equipment requirements as well as time. In conclusion, the broadcasting digital migration process, the analog switch off is several years overdue. Wasteless and fruitless expenditure on dual illumination costs as a result of not being fully digital. Additional and unwanted expenditure is still being incurred on expense items like storage, logistics, and legal costs. Thousands of households who have qualified for government subsidized set-top boxes are still waiting to be set up. All the core components of the broadcasting digital migration program has already been developed and it's yet not being implemented. Executive behavior should change to ensure that proper oversight and consequence management is implemented and individuals are held accountable. Now here are a few of the unanswered questions after investigating the reasons for the holdup of the broadcasting digital migration process. Can the SAFA account for all the expenditure on the DDE program to date? What is the reason for considering moving USASA's mandate to FinTech? What role will USASA then play if FinTech takes over USASA's mandate in terms of the DDE program? What form of consequent management did USASA take for mismanagement of taxpayers' money? Can all the set-top boxes manufactured, received, and paid for USASA be specifically accounted for? And what are the risks and associated costs of the set-top boxes in storage if these set-top boxes become redundant due to aging technology? I do want to reiterate and say thank you for the opportunity to provide this presentation to Parliament. We really need to address the consequences of corruption in South Africa, which indicates and has implication on each and every one of us, but specifically the marginalized poor of South Africa. Unemployment runs rampant. If one looks at the figures just stated in this presentation, one has to think of what that amount of money could have done to a lot of unfortunate South Africans. To what extent could we have provided health services? To what extent could we have provided education? We also just want to say that we've done a big system analysis that looks at all the stakeholders if the committee is interested in these. Unfortunately, a 92-page document, but if the committee is interested, we will happily provide the committee with the document. We just finally engaged with USASA. We sent them a letter on the 8th of October, but unfortunately hasn't received any answer as to whether we can discuss our findings and what is happening. We are also of the opinion that one also has to look at, you know, the vacancies in key positions, especially in USASA, so that USASA can function properly within its mandate, although the question remains that if FinTech takes over, what will the role be that USASA play? And also, we also believe that the whole encryption debacle needs to be resolved because, you know, whether that should play part in the digital migration, all of these little issues have got a great impact, but the impact is on South Africa. I really, really think.
From the answer,
that's the presentation members. I'm sure you want to engage, getting clarities with an understanding that we still have the department as well as USASA still coming for this committee to formal response to matters raised by our kind of circuit. I see Honorable Fagos hand is up, where Honorable Mackenzie's hand is up. I will take those in the meantime, and I will get indications if there are other members' hands were not up.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation from Otto. I think we appreciate what you are bringing to the committee, and I think it's very important that we also emphasize on the issue of corruption. I think President of the Council, President Ramaphosa, was very clear when he started the civil administration that corruption must be fought in all fronts. So I think if there's anyone within the state entities or within any department who has been found doing wrongdoing, that person must be held accountable. And I think as a committee, we are very firm when it comes to corruption, that if there's anyone that has been found doing anything wrong, this person must be held accountable. To safeguard the public, I think it's something that is very terrible. And I think as the ruling party, we are very firm to say that if you steal, law enforcement must deal with you. That is on that one, we are very clear. I think on the point of storage that you are raising, I think at this point as a committee, we've been very firm on it to say that we are not happy with the amount of storage that is the money that has been used to store this as set of boxes. Hence, you will see that after as a committee, we have made sure that USASA comes up with a plan to make sure that this set of boxes are distributed as the policy directive. Hence, you see that USASA is currently in a service level agreement with SEDHEC to make sure that I think that the SLA is currently finalized to make sure that these set of boxes are really taken to its rightful owners. So we, with the good work that SLTEC has done thus far, we understand that these issues will be dealt with immediately. But really when the amount that is that we are paying when it comes to the storage of the set of boxes, one is just not happy about it. I think even myself, I've been raising that. I think when it comes to the DTT, now we are like in the middle, we're at the tip point of things. So we can't go away from DTT. I am of the firm view that DTT transmission costs can be lowered if all parties focus on getting customer and to DTT. I think if we can do this thing, we will be able to move, but also we need the department to be firm in terms of doing oversight to these entities. And I think the acting DG is here. We want to hear from them as well. What are the immediate steps to make sure that this set of boxes are really taken to its rightful owners? I think, Chair, on consequence management, if you start, if there are any officials between the entities that have done anything wrong, you need to suspend people. You need not to wait for processes. Suspend people, take them aside, because the president has spoken about people who are corrupting these entities and departments. So I think when we, I think, Chair, on this one we're very clear, we are not going to defend any wrong way. If there's anyone who's been found doing wrong, I think we just need to confirm as a committee to say that people must deal with their issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Fagu. I will now take Honorable Mackenzie.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Advocate, for your presentation. I think the work of artists speaks for itself. I still don't pay those details. The just in
terms of your presentation, advocate, I mean, I've been sitting and dealing with the SASA for at least 6 years now, and I think many of the issues you've raised, we're not unfamiliar with them, and we agree with almost everything you have to say. I think your presentation was quite strong on digital migration and the failure of that project, and in fact, the very first speech I gave in the House in 2014 was exactly around the deadline of July 2015 for analog switch-off, and then Minister Tshwane assured me that we would meet that deadline, and here we are. So, you know, clearly the costs associated, as you say, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of rand that we needn't have incurred. What you didn't cover, I think, was the ESSA Connect side of SASA's and USAF's business, which is rolling out connectivity in many rural areas. And a lot of the I hesitate to use the word, the corruption and the mismanagement that went on around the allocation of that. You spoke of consequence management. Now let me give you an idea of consequence management as it's applied. Lucon Tendek was the CEO, correctly if I'm wrong, of the entity for several years, during which time, you know, all this performance happened. Mr. Tendek is now a special advisor in the Department of Communication. So when we talk about consequence management, you know, there's a perfect example of how you get rewarded for performance. I think in terms of the Digital Development Fund as well, events have largely overtaken us. I think, you know, there seems to be almost common cause that the set-top box thing has just ground to a halt because of COVID. The installers have fallen off the bandwagon, so it's been handed over to Centec, just on the basis that they would be able to do an effective job of getting those last boxes out. And I think, you know, generally we must support that, because they certainly are quite competent. But then you have the other issue where government's saying, okay, it's not just set-top boxes that we're going to use for DTT, because we know that there's an urgency, you know, given the auction for spectrum in the 700 megahertz band. So we know there's an urgency behind that. You've got to free up those 700 megahertz bands so we can allocate that to MNOs. So it's in everybody's interest to shut this down as soon as possible. I think to that end, government came out with the idea of IDTVs and vouchers. So you almost have three ways now we can reach this goal. IDTVs, vouchers, and set-top boxes. Now, to my mind, we should be able to do it very quickly, given that we have those three options. I mean, you make all these options available to our people, the 5 million people who still need around 5 million that need to be connected, make it available and get the job done. So we're right with you. Now I support your work and thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you, Jefferson.
You are smiling.
There is Honorable Kubenga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. And also let me appreciate the presentation that we have received today with our advocate. And also let me appreciate to say, indeed, as this committee, I think we are fully much aware on the side of the corruption to say all over the country. We are raising the issue of corruption sharply so. But let me start by saying, I think whatever challenges that we found is in the department actually when we arrived since from last year, I think there are things that they have the department have already raised, and we are trying on a serious note to try to work on those challenges in order that we need to rectify whatever mistakes that they have been there as the advocate is trying to present, especially these are the issues that you are raising, that they are already in our meetings as we are sitting. We are trying to work on a serious note there. On the side of the USASA, we are working very hard on the side of SAFO. Hence, we know that as the outer, I'm sure it was listening today on the side of the presentation of Centec, to say we are saying the one who's having at least that strength, that is the reason actually we decided to use the issue of Centec to say where you can have a solution to resolve the challenges that are there. Come in order that we can resolve those things, because those are the things that are affecting our nation actually. And those are the things that are going direct to the poor of the poorest who are supposed to be benefited. And at the end of the day, you can see that now they are prolonging, taking a longer time. But that is why now we are coming even with plans in order that we can see on the issue of the time frames to whatever delivery that the entities that needs to take. We are pushing on a harder note to try to play that oversight. But we are saying, indeed, whatever happened when it's supposed to be worked on the issue of the side of corruption, there we can't hide. We know our position as the government to say, what are we saying there? So believe me, as we are working, we will also go bit by bit, but slowly, surely, to confront those challenges that we are having at the moment in this committee, in this department, as you are raising on the side of USASA, because indeed we are even having a time frame on those side of the set of boxes to say it's been long and it needs indeed, if and only if we are saying we are late, the time frame March comes 2021, everything needs to be covered. So we appreciate, we will keep on working, challenging all those challenges that we are confronting with this department. So we are saying to advocate them very much, we will work hand in hand with the department and those entities that have been affected. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. I'm sure advocates, you'll understand that the members at this point are making brief comments because there will still be an engagement by members on the actual responses from the department and USASA as the entity. But of course, as Honorable Kubeka has just said, you have a better advantage of having listened to a presentation by Centec, which says that there is some work that's being done. But because you spoke to the point of oversight, much as you may have been referring to the department, but indirectly you are also saying to the committee that plays the oversight on both the entities and the department, that we should scale up in terms of that work. And I think Honorable Kubeka is trying to demonstrate that element. Maybe in the answers from the department, there will be more clarity, including on the report that you say would have not been published. But I must say that from the committee side, we have had an opportunity of looking at the legacy report and some of the things that we have been doing as we have kickstarted this system has been to follow up on matters raised in the legacy report. And this would have not been one of those that would have picked up, which therefore says that we may need to have an answer whether your questions are based on an interim report or is it a final report that has been commissioned, because then the actions that must follow would be on the basis of the final report. And I'm sure the person like yourself, you would know why we'll be skeptical if it was just an interim report, because on presentation, giving the side, the other side, an opportunity to present, it may change the final report, because they need to take into account facts that are presented. So I'm just saying that in the response, probably the department may give more info in that regard. But as far as the legacy report is concerned, the committees have not been seized with that, except the fact that we agree with you that the BTM program is long overdue. And I think as the committee, Honorable Faku also said it, we would want to emphasize the fight on corruption, because that's something we need to do. But it is not really at the end of it that you must deal with it. And I think that's the choice that the committee had to make, that probably we need to strengthen the governance in the delivery of BTM. And in doing so, we understood that it will not be delivered by USASA alone, because there are many other stakeholders that play a role. And therefore, in putting up a project team that implements and makes sure that the timelines that Honorable Kubeka was referring to are met, is to try and get everybody who's and interested in the affected parts to be involved throughout the implementation program, so that it makes it easy for the committee to do its oversight work, so that you don't meet USASA and then they say, no, we're still waiting for send, or we're waiting for the post office to capture the beneficiaries. And the post office will say, probably the beneficiaries are still outstanding from whether municipality or from the side of social development, as an example. So you try to integrate the work done so that finally you deliver, because we have an appreciation that we cannot continue in the way we've been doing things. Things have to change. So I think from where we are as a committee, the focus is changing to more of making things to happen through our oversight. Of course, appreciating that they could have been done better, but we can't reverse that has happened. But South Africans will judge us more on what we know now going forward. So I'm just saying, please appreciate that aspect. There's some work done by the committee, hence their timelines and so on. And as I say, with the advantage of listening to the Centec presentation, you would also understand why this BDM is important in us resolving problems in SABC and the other broadcasters. So I just thought, if I don't just firm up that point, even though we're not responding directly now, it helps that when we get to the department and they begin to raise some of the interventions which are as a result of committee discussions, at least you would have known that this would have been an initiative from the committee. All the other worries about technology, obsolete and so on, is going through our records. A number of these members would have raised that before. And there were assurances given that there would be something that gets done in that score. Maybe just one point to add that score would be that whilst in the past the focus was more on the poor households, which are dependent more from the funding from USAF, as you would have mentioned, the committee's approach has been that we still need to strike the balance, that there are those that may not be in the house, in the poor households, which is what you would call the unsubsidized market, but they also want to have access in terms of DTT, that is switching to DTT from analog, and that some means have to be devised that they can access gadgets in that way, whether you call them antennas or set-top boxes, in whatever form it takes. But they are easily accessible, and in the view of the committee, it's also been about addressing natural subsidization, because with other services, people have been able to do that, not waiting until available, and now Ubuntu is also about being able to have the service. So it's not as the granny not having access to other channels when the grandson or granddaughter is able to assist. But it therefore says there must be an access point. Where would they get such cashes and so on? And I think when the department responds, they will be able to talk to that also, what is being done on the unsubsidized market. Because necessarily that's where the bigger numbers are. And with the other broadcasters, for example, they're already on DDT in the other spaces, whereas the national broadcaster that's funded by government has not been able to because of this part. So that's where we are. But I just thought you should leave the meeting knowing. We could have also decided that indeed just give us the documents so that we go through them and respond. But I want you to also understand that it is not just an opportunity that we present, but it is a commitment that we have of ensuring that Parliament is the Parliament of the people, and it is through participation of also civil society that we also gauge the work we do, in particular the responsiveness of government, which is a constitutional obligation, because that's what we committed in the Constitution. So we do that, whether it's through roundtable discussions sometimes, if you are following what the committee does. All these platforms are about ensuring that we also hear different views, especially those that have insight of what happens in the sector, so that those who play oversight like ourselves, we are also having at least a bit of knowledge of what the people in the sector are experiencing and what could be and we think we are not far from what the president has asked us to do in social compact and getting social partners to participate in one way or the other to reconstruct the economy of the country and so on. So I just thought it's important that one makes those reflections. But as I said, it's mainly comments at this point in time. I would give you an opportunity to comment, but I do see that is it Honorable Faku, was your hand up or is it now?
It's up now, Chair.
Kubeka, is your hand up now or was it up at the time? So it means at that time. So I'll then take Honorable Faku before I advocate for the comment, and then I can then do some closing remarks finally.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think I just need to say something before maybe you allow advocate to speak. I think it's important that as a committee we noted that I hear that Honorable Mackenzie is raising the name of Mr. Mpimde that is in the presidency. I think we need to make sure that we make sure that the public really know what transpired. If we remember, you are talking about the legacy report, Chair, that we've received, so that people don't think there's no consequence management when dealing with officials. Although we want to fight corruption, but I think we need to be clear. If we remember during the time of Mr. Pimsa at USASA when he was the board chair, the public protector, the report that was released, which had remedial actions, which cleared him, and also the report from the High Court from Justice Dilenovo. So I think also the then minister then of communication, I think it was Siyabonga Gcwele, who also uplifted his suspension because of the remedial actions of the public protector then. So I think, Chair, it's important that we don't think that our government is not taking any action against officials. There were remedial action by the public protector, and also he was cleared of any wrongdoing. So I think I needed to clear that so that there's no wrong perception that our government is not taking action
and Mr. Mpim that was cleared from everything. Thank you.
So thank you, Honorable Fagu, for that clarity. I think it's important. If there would have been a mention of a name, that helps to clarify. Otherwise, there would be a wrong public perception, especially if you've been cleared. The allegations could have been made before, but once you're cleared, at least the public should still know that you've been cleared on those. Thanks, Honorable Fab. So if I can give to advocate to reflect on the comments made, and that we can then report on this item.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you for the comments. I think that's why we felt we could come to this committee, and we really want to give kudos to this committee for the work that that you've done already. I think a lot of the comments we do get from your discussions in this committee. So thank you so much for allowing us to make this presentation. Although some of the facts you may already know, we do think it is important to keep on saying, accountability until, everything doesn't have to be criminal, as long as there's steps taken and as long as we learn from the process that might go wrong for whatever reasons. And then I believe this committee, if they say that, if someone is guilty of corruption, the steps will be taken. And if there's a problem in the process, that the process will be rectified. So again, thank you on behalf of myself, my team, and on behalf of ALTA. We really, really are thankful for this opportunity. We will watch this space to see that digital migration happens for our fellow South Africans, and we believe in what this committee can do. So thank you very much.
Thank you. As you said, the honourable members, we will still engage the matter when the department and USASA response, and that will also be open to the public so you can follow the discussions from wherever you be, because there's really nothing to add but more to give confidence to South Africans that we are responding to matters that get raised with the committee. Thanks. Would not keep you knowingly that you may have other engagements to get to, but we really thank you for making time when we gave you the opportunity to. Thank you. Thank you. Honorable members, I know now we are left with a few minutes to the scheduled time. I'm trying to check if Lucy has something. Right, we're supposed to get a presentation from Vensling Center.
I am present, Chair.
Okay, you are here. Okay, thank you. We'll allow you to get in. But I just thought we should just wrap up proper the two sessions we had, so that when we get to you, we know how to manage the time. If you can just indicate on the side, Lucy, that you would need what time, because we just need to extend 17 minutes, I don't think would be enough. For members, I know that at 2 o'clock there is the house sitting, and a number of members who are attending physically would have to make their way to Parliament after half past 12, at least.
I'm in your hands, Chair. I think that's fine. We can manage by half past 12.
Okay. All right, with that, honorable members having been clarified, I just thought it's important to just emphasize the two discussions so that as we get to the next meeting next week, we are clearer.
I think with Centec, there's, I think, a bit of clarity now with regard to costs and so on. And I know there's been a request with regards to the margins that it be in writing because of commercial sensitivity. That would follow up as a committee to ensure that committee members do receive that information. As well as, I think more importantly, is the engagement that continues between the SABC and CENTEC. And I want to say to members the importance of that confirmation by CENTEC is to really also validate what the Deputy Minister reported as work that she's coordinating between the entities. As delegated by the minister to work with those entities. I think it's the work we should be able to support, and I think that members would use that information when we have discussions with the SABC in the next meeting. As I said, without them probably be on the platform on the day of the discussion, but what will then happen would be that the department will be the ones responding to the department, and USASA will be the ones that will be presenting in response to OUTA on the day. So I just thought it's important to remind ourselves that that's what we would be expecting. I'm doing this so that we don't get back to such issues when we are now on this other item that Vestling Center will take us through. Honorable Fagu, I see your hand. You have not lowered it. And Honorable Okay, so it means you have not necessarily raised. Honorable McKenzie, I see your hand is not lowered.
Yes, thank you, Chair. If I could just, with your indulgence, just add to your rather excellent, usually excellent summary. In terms of the margin for CENTEC, Mr. Namiboy did give us an indication that the margin was in the range between 12% and 20%, which is certainly not excessive as far as I'm concerned in terms of sustainable business. So I don't think CENTEC need to provide that information anymore, but I'll remain up.
Thanks, Honorable McKenzie. But as you know, that's a range. But if they were to give us specifics, that's why they will not do it in public. That's fine. Thanks for that clarity, because I think that is at the time our term of connection. Otherwise, that's where we are. We would now hand over to Vestling Center.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will just share my screen in a moment. Good morning, honourable members, colleagues. Is my screen visible?
Hello, Lucy, yes it is.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. So this is the third formal presentation that we are making to this committee. The previous presentation also included members from other committees. And I thought that for today's session, I did confer with the with Mbombo Maneka about the content of today's presentation. But I thought that for today's presentation, I would look at a few of, let's call them the cornerstones or the building blocks for the SABC digital economy. And in a sense, this is what the Parliamentary Committee does on a regular basis, maybe in a slightly different way, because it is looking backwards or it is looking at the current state of events. And what I heard in the presentation this morning, your comments about CENTEC the presentation on broadcast digital migration, to a large extent looks backwards and at the current state of affairs. But the SADC region economy has, as we all know, many very serious challenges. Challenges which cannot be easily addressed or perhaps even addressed at all without moving that regional economy into the digital economy. And I talk about the SADC regional economy today because the South African economy itself cannot evolve and develop on its own. In the era of digitalization, no economy evolves on its own. This is not just about globalization because, of course, the South African economy is already part of the global landscape. But as the global landscape transitions to a digital economy, individual countries will find it more and more difficult to participate in the digital economy as single countries, as standalone markets. We're not going to get into the detail of why this is. It would be a good conversation to have maybe in another session when we are not so pressed for time. I'm going to try to end my presentation by 12:15 so that we have a few minutes for conversation. So if we think about these building blocks, these cornerstones for the regional economy, they include institutions such as parliament and parliamentary committees, regulators, policymakers, and others. Another cornerstone is policy, and then of course law and regulation. So just taking some of the highlights from the past two modules, the broad policy and regulatory agenda for this committee and for many other committees begins to converge. Because it is not only this committee that will discuss 5G policy futures, additive manufacturing, digital government, digital health services, and digital skills. But all parliamentary committees must have digital transition, digital transformation of the economy and society on their agenda. And I'm aware that there has been some initial work by this committee to engage with those other committees, and I think that work will need to continue. That at least until all parliamentary committees and all select committees have digital innovation, digital transition, digital transformation of economy and society as items on their annual agenda, all committees. This is now the business of the whole of Parliament. The PCC and the Select Committee dealing with communications still have particular mandates, particular issues to pay attention to that are different or slightly different from those of other committees, but I think that one of the items on the agenda for this committee is to promote digital as an agenda item on every other committee agenda. I'll say something about the pace of policy adoption and regulation as it is linked to legislation for South Africa, model laws for the SADC region, the work of the SADC Parliamentary Forum, and then very briefly something about the powers and functions of key institutions. So, from the perspective of digital economy strategy, we see that the DCDT has introduced some thinking, some strategies, some documents, but really this is not just a matter for the DCBT. So what I've said about Parliament, parliamentary committees, and the issues of digital transformation being on the agendas of all committees, I would say a similar thing in relation to policy and government departments, namely that all government departments will have, should have, must have digital economy strategies on the agenda. And I'll just highlight a few. One, additive manufacturing. We do have an additive manufacturing strategy for South Africa. There is some early transition, some early shift of the manufacturing sector to adopt additive manufacturing. Additive manufacturing meaning a wide variety of new forms of manufacturing. Let me call it technology intensive manufacturing. Manufacturing which is digitally different, and in most instances you see that the manufactured product is built up by layers in various formats. And we can have another conversation on additive manufacturing. This is just a quick perspective. But as we know very well, the first government inherited a declining, and one might say a failing, manufacturing sector. And the South African manufacturing sector is struggling to be competitive. It is struggling to compete against the most advanced countries in the world, and the most advanced countries in terms of manufacturing, where already there is intensive adoption of digital approaches to manufacturing, can squeeze just about every other country out of global markets. And we are being squeezed out. So one might say, what has this got to do with the portfolio on communication? Well, the portfolio on communication, Committee on Communication, is interested in and has oversight over, to some extent, the pace of policy adoption and regulation. It does not only have oversight over the individual institutions and what they do, but also the pace at which they engage in that activity. And so if policy and regulation with respect to providing that digital ecosystem is slow, then the portfolio committee has something to say. What I've said for additive manufacturing is equally true for digital government services and applications, digital media streaming, which is really where broadcasting is moving, digital pedagogy and content streaming for online learning, which is where basic education is moving, FinTech, which is where banking is moving, digital health services, which is where primary health care is moving, and of course that all goes along with data protection and digital skills. And what this means is that a comprehensive review of the regulatory environment is required, because the current regulatory environment will not keep us going for 2021, 2022. I would say we're very unprepared for 2023, 2025, 2027, and so on. And while historically the situation was different, that you could, you know, in 2013 prepare for 2016 and in 2016 prepare for 2020, that world is gone. We now have to prepare increasingly well in advance in order to manage the significant agenda content of policy and regulation. The extent required for policy and regulation to provide this ecosystem within which we can migrate. Migrate is just as good a word as transition. And what we've just heard about broadcast digital migration is, of course, for the attention of the committee rather than for my attention, but it also speaks of the pace of adoption and migration. So we seem to have a bit of a pace problem. Not just us. You might say every country in the world has a pace problem, but perhaps we have it slightly more than we should for our needs as South Africa, as a South African economy and society. And that comprehensive review means that it's not only ICASA regulations that need to be reviewed, it's also NERSA, it's the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, it's the Health Professional Council, it's the Consumer Committee and Consumer Commission, and many others. The entire regulatory environment needs a refresh, needs to have foresight, needs to be well prepared, not only from the perspective of the transition to from 4G to 5G communications networks, but really the opportunities that build on those networks. We are concerned about the transition from 4G to 5G, not because we care that much about the network side, but because the network is the foundation for all these opportunities. The digital health, the very fast internet that we need to do all kinds of medical scans, brain scans and others at a distance, remotely. Perhaps this is a scan of patients in a smart village in Lephalale. Perhaps this is digital content streaming for grade 8 and grade 9 learners in Lephalale. So we are spectacularly unprepared. While we look backward, and it's very important to look backward and to look at the current, but it is equally important to look forward. The next two slides I borrowed from one of the lecturers in the course last week. I'm sure he won't mind, since you were participants in many of the lectures. That a few other points about what we build on this 5G network. And of course, the 5G network doesn't go everywhere. It goes to the points where you need 5G network. We are seeing the cloudification of everything. So everything is moving to the cloud. This kind of remote healthcare can only happen in the cloud. This kind of content streaming and education can only happen in the cloud. And what that means is we will have many, many more devices at the edge. Just imagine the digital terminal devices in 3,500 primary healthcare clinics and community health centers. That is where we need to go. That is how we need to address this third level of the digital divide, to ensure the digital inclusion of South African citizens in primary health clinics in Lephalale, in schools in Lephalale. As we speak, we do have Wi-Fi networks in schools. Mostly they don't work, they don't work well. The speed is not good enough for digital learning. And furthermore, we do not have the terminal device that the end users can use. And if we miss out on the 5G network, cloudification, and the availability of devices to these very important young users in schools and in primary health clinics and community health centers, South Africa will miss the artificial intelligence revolution. Is that a good thing? Well, there are cyber risks, of course. We'll miss the cyber risks, but we'll also miss the cyber benefits. Or let me say, not miss, miss out on. These are just a few of the advances. When I say we struggle to compete, that doesn't simply mean that we struggle to compete by selling our agricultural products or our manufactured products or our services in the global market. It also means that we are not evolving as a society, as a country, as cities, as metros, where drones are used in agriculture and in, let's say, building maintenance, where robotics is used in manufacturing, where emergency communication is highly advanced, where we have significant asset tracking in our airports, where we have live event streaming in our schools. So it's not simply a question of losing out in terms of selling something on a global market. We're also losing out in terms of the pace at which our cities, our schools, our universities, our manufacturing industries, our labor is evolving in a digital century. The National Digital and Future Skills Strategy, adopted by Cabinet in August 2020, we are now in the process of writing the implementation plan for that. And when one thinks about digital foundations, and here we're talking about the schools under the DBE, the environment for digital foundations requires a major transition in the schooling system. The current nature of a school as a physical space where people gather in classrooms, that is not the school of the future. That's not just because I think that, or other people think that. That's because there are real opportunities here to address challenges of learning weaknesses that we have not been able to address in the analog classroom. For example, really understanding math. In fact, the DBE has a document about math teaching where it focuses on creating understanding, real mathematics understanding. And we can't create that real math understanding with a chalkboard or flip chart. It's impossible. We can only create that real math understanding with dynamic software. And that means devices, good internet, etc. Similarly, in the TVET system, the technical and vocational education and training environment, this is where robotics specialists, visualization specialists, cybersecurity specialists will get their training. So that means a complete revision of the TVET system. And that TVET system, in the manner of how it trains, will need to be very practice-oriented. So TVETs are going to need 5G networks to do all kinds of streaming, to do virtual training using virtual reality and augmented reality, where perhaps TVETs in Gauteng are working simultaneously with TVETs in Mpumalanga, are working simultaneously with TVETs in the Eastern Cape. What that means is that the policy and regulatory environment needs to have a very good understanding and a rapid and highly informed response from regulators in order to make the spectrum available that is needed for 5G. ICASA is working on this.
it was required to respond to the 2019 Ministerial Policy Direction on High Demand Spectrum, and although we do not yet have sight of that work, but it was required to present that within a period of 6 months after the last World Radio Conference, which ended in December. So we should expect that this work, this response has been delivered to the minister or is being delivered to the minister as we speak, and that it should shortly be served to this parliamentary committee as information. The department is required in terms of its APP to publish a 5G policy, and it may publish a draft, it is likely to publish a draft in the final quarter of the year, the government year, between January and March 2020. This is just an excerpt from the Ministerial Policy Direction requiring ICASA to report to the minister on the spectrum requirements of 5G in bands lower than 6 GHz, that's this side of the spectrum diagram, and in the millimeter wave band, which is this side of the diagram. I see we're perilously close to 12:15, I'm getting there. So just very quickly, I did speak about the SADC, and it's therefore very important to be familiar, to familiarize ourselves at parliamentary level as well with the SADC model laws and the CRASA regulatory guidelines. This is a list of recent CRASA regulatory guidelines on many issues on radio frequency spectrum, mobile broadband gap analysis, digital financial inclusion, universal access funding and so on, rural broadband guidelines. So there is extensive information in the SADC environment that is very relevant to this parliamentary committee. For example, on cybersecurity and personal data protection, there is the African Union Convention on Cybercrime and Personal Data Protection of 2014. Only 14 African countries have signed, and only 8 African countries have ratified that AU convention, and we see that South Africa is not amongst them. Still talking about the pace of policy adoption and regulation, we indeed have the Poppy Act in 2013, but the implementation date for all sections was only June 2020. So certain sections came into effect earlier, but the final sections only came into effect in June 2020. That is what I mean by the slow pace of adoption. Similarly with the Cybercrime Act, which has been approved both by this committee and by the select committee, we note that it is still awaiting signature, and that the cyber security matters which were removed from that Cybercrime Act still need to be dealt with in additional legislation. So if we are relatively slow, we do not yet have all of this in place. This again suggests that the policy and regulatory environment, or rather policy, law, and regulatory environment for the digital economy, for this transition to the digital economy, still needs a lot of work. The Poppy Act is really important because of the way in which it addresses the rights of data subjects, and I'm not sure when this committee will hear, perhaps from the information regulator, as you have many reports, if you have recently heard or will soon hear from the information regulator on its progress, but its progress is vital, vital foundation for the digital economy. And my second last slide, just to also note the SADC Parliamentary Forum discussion paper on the digital economy and society, which is being prepared by Research ICT Africa. It is not yet available publicly available, but it will shortly be available. And this again is where these key issues that we've just spoken about, data protection and privacy, cybersecurity and surveillance, cybercrime, are these are the foundations for effective and successful e-commerce and e-transaction. So this will be a major focus, should be a major focus for the PCC, the Select Committee, and many parliamentary committees in the coming year, 2021, and of course future years. And finally, just to make a quick comment on the power and functions of institutions, just as I indicated, suggested, recommended that there needs to be a full review, comprehensive review of regulation. There needs to be a comprehensive review of the powers and functions of institutions, including ICASA, to make an assessment whether, in fact, the regulators, as they are currently mandated in legislation, have the powers and functions required to progress, to advance their part, their contribution to the evolution of the digital economy. I thank you, Chair.
So now, which is what we have. In terms of what we have,
thank you, Ms. Barbosa, for the presentation. If we can show that we mute the mics. I'm sure you can still hear me.
Yes, yes, thank you, Chair. We're back in your hands.
All right. I will now use the remaining minutes for members to get into a conversation. I'm just making sure that these members who have right there in the system actually are raising their hands. I see Honorable Fako, Honorable McKenzie. Am I leaving anyone? Let's keep those hands for now. Honorable Fako.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Prof. I think one must appreciate Prof. every time she speaks. I think she instills new knowledge every time she speaks. I think let us appreciate the presentation from Prof. And I think Chair, Prof is raising a very important point to say that if we want to achieve digital economy, we need to bring everyone on board so that everyone understands what digital economy can bring to our country. You know, digital economy can create a lot of jobs. I think maybe as a committee, we need to have a roundtable conversation as we normally have, especially with Treasury, Department of Small Business, GTI, Department of Trade and Industry. I think we need to have a conversation with them so that we put them on time. I remember at some point I'm also serving in the committee of ICT group in Parliament, who once did an oversight to one of the main service providers, network service providers. You know, what I've experienced then is that how medication is monitored through the digital technology. I was so impressed. You can even look at a patient who has taken medication. The system tells you how many medications are left and where you need to order and all that. And that will help us in terms of service delivery. And Prof is also raising an issue of manufacturing, which I have a great passion with. And I think that in South Africa, if we can move that part, if you can look at Ethiopia, they are some of the fastest growing countries in the continent. It is because they are focusing on manufacturing. But I think that this idea that Prof is coming up with, I think we need to have this roundtable discussion so that we are able to assist our government. You know, even the issue that she's raising about digital technology when it comes to school in terms of mathematics, we know as a country the skills that were really struggling in mathematics. You know, I also have a son who struggles to grasp things.
and you know the education system does not accommodate them. So I think the points that she has raised are very important points. But also, I think the point that she's raising about the review of regulators of their current mandate, do they have the manpower to do what they're supposed to do? And I think these are points that we that are very important that we need to absorb as a department in here. And I think that it is not only the safety chain that will make sure that we achieve digital economy. It will be a collective effort, but I think, Chair, it's important the department or the committee must have that roundtable discussion so that we make sure that everyone, especially, I also hope that we will do this before the spectrum is auctioned, this discussion. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Fagu. I'm not calling Honorable McKenzie. Please do indicate, members, if I'm leaving your hands as I can see from here, but I did see Honorable McKenzie. Honorable McKenzie?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Professor Abrams, not only for the insight we've got today, but the insight over the past 2 months. Thank you to you, Chair, and the Committee Secretariat for facilitating and arranging all of this. I think we all know that knowledge is the biggest commodity of all, and the manner in which it's been shared has been great. I've certainly learned a lot, and I'm sure my colleagues have too. So a broad word of thanks to you and your colleagues, Bradley, Professor Bellum. Since last term, I agree with 100% what you say. You would think that telecommunications and, in fact, communication digital technologies is the portfolio committee of the department that would almost be the foundation upon which every other department in this country should build their offering. And we should be the foundation for all of that. And I think the sooner governments start to get their head around that concept, the sooner governments would be a much more efficient and effective organization. It's been my wish that we rename this department the Department of AA, Communications and Digital Technologies, and that put us right at the top of the list. Then just in terms of alternative manufacturing, I think it'd be great if we could have another session on that. I think perhaps with another portfolio as well. I think it's a tremendous initiative. In terms of those technologies, Prof, just a quick question. Would you include 3D modeling as part of those technologies? Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable McKenzie. May I just check if I'm leaving any member before I go forward? If not, what do you prof?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members, for those comments and questions, and particularly for the your very kind comments on the course. Your experience of the course, we similarly benefited from the experience because we had participants from 8 SADC countries, from regulators, from industry, from national treasury, and I think that kind of participation made for a different and a very valuable conversation. On the question of additive manufacturing, 3D printing is definitely one of the tools, technologies, and approaches within the broader additive manufacturing envelope. And South Africa does have some capacity, assets, in terms of 3D printing, but it is not as extensive as it could be, in the sense that we are still, waiting for imports from Germany or from China, which take a long time to get here, and it may well be that those components, those parts that we're waiting for have been 3D printed in Germany or China, and then sent on a ship or a plane to South Africa, when in fact we could quite easily do that kind of 3D additive manufacturing ourselves.
we will certainly be very willing to arrange a presentation on additive manufacturing in particular. Perhaps that is an agenda item for next year. And then my last comment, I think again in response to all the comments made, is that, and I did raise this with Mr. Maleka, who asked me to raise it now, namely that we would be very keen no additional cost in terms of the current agreement to continue these sessions, these short sessions. They can be slightly shorter or slightly longer as time allows, during the course of 2021, choosing key topics such as the additive manufacturing topic, if that is the wish of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Prof. I think the committee would indeed welcome that, that we have the sessions going forward, but would also want, which is the matter we've also said, Mr. Malik as a content advisor has been working on the program, need to raise with you, that the issue of this course, I think for many of us members, it's not merely a worry that we are not attending and therefore the issue of fruitless expenditure, okay? But it's not really about money alone, but the thirst we have for knowledge in the committee so that we understand the center we are playing oversight on. And with the intense program of Parliament, we've not been able to attend as we would have wished, which is something we're able to do when we started with the course. That's something we think between yourself and Mr. Maleka would need to work on, even if it means maybe sacrificing some time in the evening,
yes,
just to make sure that we can still balance the two, that Parliament has invested in our capacity building, but more importantly, it is us who needs the capacity building program in order to make the committee effective. So I'm just saying that's something over and above the seminars and roundtable discussions, but how we are able to get back to that program and catch up. And I'm sure if you are following discussions of the committee on various items, especially where we have gone through some of the lectures, it can only be better in the way committee members are able to engage on the matters before us. So I think that's something we would want you to leave with, and maybe it's something you can come back to us on how we can manage at that time. I'm speaking for many of the members who have commented to me on the site on how helpful the course would have been and how this program now, intense program, would have been affected negatively as members in terms of attendance. And I'm sure you see the items, they are quite hot before the committee, and the committee has to unfortunately respond to that primarily, and then be able to still continue capacity building. So if you would want to make a quick comment on that, so that we then close formally.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think similarly to committee members and yourself raising the issue with Mr. Maleka, I also raised the issue with Mr. Maleka, so we are both concerned about the same thing. I take your guidance that we will discuss how we can find yet another way of
doing what we did not do fully and completely. We did partially, but not fully and completely. So I'm happy to take that on board, and we will certainly come back to you. One question is whether there would be time or opportunity for one more session this year, and I'll consult on that, and we will then provide you with a program which perhaps better fits the time arrangements on your side.
On that note, thanks, Prof. Honourable members, I think as we said, because of the house sitting, I really have to thank you for staying on until at this point. And I must say that it is always beneficial, especially the last session, Prof, because it's a program that talks to us without us having to make a decision on the spot, but help us to prepare even better for the future as we'll be dealing with different matters before us. More importantly, because when you talk to the digital economy, this has now become the priority of the country, whether you refer to what the Minister would have said of finance last year on the recovery plan. The President has re-emphasized this point again in the reconstruction of the economy post-COVID. And we have to rise to the occasion as different players in the sector. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Honourable Members. Thanks, Lucy. And until we meet again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Prof.
Bye, Prof. Thank you, Chairperson. Good meeting as always.
Bless you.
Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you. Honourable Members.